The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Drew Brees is going to be with the Saints. He's starting at quarterback against the Kansas City Chiefs. Remember yesterday, did you start Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston? Maybe Jameis gives you the better chance against the Chiefs because he's a, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, as Bruce Arians says, quarterback. Take shots down the field, engage the Chiefs in a shootout, which you probably lose, but at least you also have a chance to win versus Taysom Hill. What are you going to try and chew clock against the Chiefs? Think that's going to work? It probably won't. More likely to win in a shootout, actually, counterintuitively, as Casey Joyner, the football scientist, tells you on this show, than you are in a low-scoring game against the Chiefs. They have a much worse record in shootouts. It's still an excellent record, but they're practically undefeated when it's not a shootout over the last several seasons. But Drew Brees, I think, gives you the best chance of all, right? But meantime, Jameis is now the backup, and Taysom Hill is back to being a super gadget player. But that's some gadget, boy. You see Taysom Hill on the field, who knows what could happen, right? Think of what Sean Payton could do with him now. He's demonstrated that he can read the defense and throw the ball down the field. He can run the ball. He can block. He can be your tight end, your running back, your quasi-fullback. He can line up on the outside. He's blazing fast. He can run between the tackles. He can catch a pass out of the backfield. Like, what do you want Taysom Hill can do? If it's football-related, he can do it, and he can do it pretty well. But Drew Brees is the story here, obviously. All those fractured ribs, a punctured lung, 40 years old. And this season, we have it up on ESPN+, 18 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, a QBR over 80. But the main thing is, to me, more than any of that, Drew Brees is playing for his legacy. I mean, it's secure. He's a great quarterback. But what happens if Drew Brees wins another Super Bowl? You think that doesn't inch him up on the all-time list? Is Drew Brees a top five quarterback? Hell no. Drew Brees, you take five guys over Drew Brees in the history of football, easy, right? Now, what if he wins a Super Bowl this year? What if he's a two-time Super Bowl champion? What if he wins Super Bowl MVP this year? This is his last shot to do it. It's maybe the best team he's ever played on, but certainly since the Super Bowl team. He's got a number two receiver. He's been missing it for years. He's got a defense. He hasn't always had that. They're both performing until last week at a very high level. And he's got rest. Remember how Drew Brees would wear down in the playoffs the last couple of years? Like, I took the Saints over the Rams primarily because I trusted Drew Brees more than Jared Goff a couple years ago. And I know, the Saints had calls to go against them, but so did the Rams. They missed a call with the Rams on the other side of the field right before they blew the call with the Saints. But the point is, they really have been unlucky with calls, and that really can make a difference. But Drew Brees also did not throw a good ball on that play, right? He looked old and tired. Well, one of the silver linings in, or maybe the silver lining, in having all those fractured ribs and missing all that time, Drew Brees should be rested. So maybe he doesn't wear down at the end of the season in the playoffs. Maybe it gives him his best chance to win a Super Bowl. And more than that, guys, there's one bye per conference. So think about this. How important is that? Well, let's say you want to make the championship game in your conference, right? Pretty good idea if you're trying to win a Super Bowl. And let's say, you have the first round matchup. You're 80% likely to win. Overwhelming odds. The second round, you are 60% likely to win. Still very good odds. You're significantly more likely to win than lose. Guess what that means? That means you're less likely to get to the NFC Championship game than you are to miss it. Because 80% likely to win your first game and 60 your second means you're only 48% likely to win both. You're under 50-50. But when you don't have to play that first game, if you're 60% likely to win your next game, you're well over 50-50 to win it. It's a huge, huge difference. Know why the Patriots won so many Super Bowls? One of the reasons is they played in the putrid division with no quarterbacks. They always had the best record in the division. They always had a bye in the first round. All they ever had to do was win a home playoff game, one single home playoff game, and they were in the AFC Championship game. So a bad year for them was like, damn, Patriots lost in the AFC Championship game. But boy, a lot of teams would love that. Yeah, because all they had to do was win a hosted playoff game, one home playoff game at Foxborough. They're in the game, in the championship game. Well, the Saints would love that in the NFC. get a bye, and host a playoff game. A home playoff game, and then you're in the NFC Championship game. And by the way, we all know the Saints play much better at home than on the road, historically, like traditionally in the Drew Brees era. Drew Brees is, like, if Drew Brees is on the road, I may not take him in DraftKings, for example. Drew Brees is at home? Ooh, that's a good bet. If the price is right on Drew Brees and they're playing in the dome, take him. He's going to put up numbers. And the Saints are tough to beat. But it's not just that they won't have home field if they don't, or not just not they won't have the bye if they don't win. If they wind up playing the Packers in the NFC Championship game, so let's say they don't get the bye, they're 80% likely to win the first game, 60% to win the second, so 48% likely to get to the NFC Championship game, but they upset the odds very slightly, and they do it. They win their first game, they win their second game, they're in the NFC Championship game against the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field. Not just that they're not playing in a dome climate control, they have to go somewhere else on the road because fans won't be a big issue this postseason, these playoffs, because of the pandemic. It's not just that they don't have the dome in perfect climate-controlled situation. They got to go to the frozen tundra in January and play Aaron Rodgers in the pack? Good luck. It's a huge game for the Saints. I'm telling you right now, if they get home field, they have a chance to win the Super Bowl. If they get that first round bye, they got a chance to win the Super Bowl. Like a real chance. And I'll tell you something else. When I look at this Chiefs team, the way they've been playing football, sometimes you got to take a step back and say, what kind of team is that? It's a 14-2 team. I believe they're going to win the Super Bowl, and they should have two losses. They're playing like a two-loss team. They let teams hang around. Sometimes they let them come back into games. Sometimes they let them get a little head start. And then they put them out of their misery, right? The problem is this. You're traveling to New Orleans to play the most motivated version of Drew Brees, who knows this is it. He was going to retire last year. This is his last and best chance to win another Super Bowl. And against a team that knows in order to do it, they got to get that first round bye. They got to avoid Lambeau in the in January. They couldn't be more motivated. Chiefs ain't got nothing to worry about in the AFC. What are you joking? Like, the fact of the matter is, I know you say, well, these guys are internally motivated and external motivation like that is not always the thing. And, you know, aren't they still going to try hard? Yes, but you can tap reservoirs of adrenaline under real pressure that can make you better, especially not like baseball, which sometimes you press too hard, you get worse. But in football, an effort game, when you're more motivated, you do tend to play better. You know, it's like sometimes you hear, oh, this guy's got to relax. But usually in the NFL, you want them to go harder. And the situation simply is more dire circumstances for the Saints. They need the game more. They're at home. And they got Drew Brees back. Do I pick them in the upset? The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance.
Chiefs at Saints.
This is the NFL whip around, and we're going to start right there with the Chiefs at Saints. And, yup, I'm going to pick the Saints in an upset. I think the Saints upset the Chiefs for the reasons I just told you. The Saints, I think, are the second-best team in football, or at least the most balanced, and the best in the NFC, most balanced in the NFC. They had, for a month at least, the best defense in the league. They have a dynamic offense. With Drew Brees back, they have one of the best quarterbacks in the world, top 10 certainly. Jameis Winston's a hell of a backup to have, and Taysom Hill as a second or third string quarterback plus gadget player can play anywhere at a high level. They got everything they need there. They have their number one receiver in Michael Thomas, the legit number two in Emmanuel Sanders, recovered from COVID. They have a great running back who can do everything in Alvin Kamara. They can play the run. They can do a lot of things. The New Orleans Saints. And I think given the motivation, they upset the Chiefs at home, at New Orleans, and hand the Chiefs their second and I think final loss of the season, and also set up a hell of a Super Bowl rematch. Okay, next up.
Texans at Colts.
It's not an easy game to pick. Look, Houston is not a good team, but they have a great quarterback in Deshaun Watson. When you watch Deshaun Watson play, and I really think this was a pivotal year for Deshaun Watson, because sometimes I would look and think, he gets a little too much credit for that championship stink he had all over him from college and from being compared to Michael Jordan and from just getting having a sense that he's the guy you want with a ball in his hands, right? But then when you actually looked at the numbers, you said, is he actually an elite quarterback? Yep, yes, he is. This year was pivotal. And on a bad team, it looked bad for him. I thought, people may start to underrate Watson after this year. Nope, not possible. He's been playing lights out. But the Colts are at home, and they're a better team. And as much as as little faith as I have in the Colts, I think because they're at home, and they're still playing for something, because they're in the mix, you know, listen, there's no guarantee the Colts are in the playoffs. I like the Colts to win at home against the Texans.
Patriots at Dolphins.
Miami's the better team. Miami's at home. Miami needs the win. Patriots are going to beat them. And the reason the Patriots are going to beat them is this. Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick's effect on both quarterbacks is going to be the difference. You see, Cam Newton, does he really deserve to keep his starting job? I would argue yes based on the results of the games. They're only one game under 500. With no talent on offense. With no Patrick Chung. With no Hightower on defense. They missed Gilmore for a while on defense, too. They don't have the same defensive talent they had last year. They have no offensive talent at all. And they have a quarterback recovering from catastrophic injury and COVID in a new system on a new team, right? And yet they're only a game under 500, and if not for two plays, they'd be a couple games over 500. So they're pretty good. Dolphins are better. But Belichick has stuck with Cam. And what he's mentioned was Cam's competitiveness, his leadership, and his work ethic. And that's the Patriot way. It doesn't look like the Patriot way from afar because of the way Cam plays. But it is the Patriot way. That's going to help the Patriots, the loyalty Belichick's showing Cam. And it's also going to hurt the Dolphins because rookie quarterback against Belichick, he eats them for lunch. 45-0. He beat Justin Herbert, who's better than Tua, and the Chargers. He's going to beat the Dolphins, too. Browns at Giants. Come on, let's go.
Browns at Giants.
Giants in an upset. I'm calling it. Daniel Jones, who's hobbled. A hobbled Daniel Jones is why the Giants look so bad against Arizona. Because Jones, when the defense knows he can't move, that's a huge part of his game. He's a sitting duck, right? He's got to get better in the pocket. Colt McCoy is not going to try and do too much. He's going to do what's asked of him. And given the Giants' defense against the run, which is the Browns' strength, and again, the Browns coming off an emotional loss, but in a close game to big brother Baltimore Ravens, the Browns, who are going to make the playoffs most likely anyway, have simply not only have a little trap game and an emotional letdown game now that they're not playing a divisional rival with the playoffs already likely in hand, but the Giants are very motivated because they need to win two of their next three, and then next week they got to play the Ravens. They got to win two of their next three and hope Washington loses two of the next three to make the playoffs. So a hungrier Giants team not going into a trap game with a kind of run defense that can bother the Browns and a quarterback who won't just be a sitting duck upset the Cleveland Browns.
We're building.
49ers at Cowboys.
Oh, the Who Cares Bowl. My prediction is who cares? The Niners are going to beat Dallas, but they have a better defense than Dallas, and Dallas is garbage. Next! I can't.
Eagles at Cardinals.
The Eagles, now that they've made that switch to Jalen Hurts, they're not your very slightly older cousins, Eagles. This is a different kind of team now. And they're on the road against Arizona, but they just, you know, they shocked the best defense in the world at the moment in New Orleans. And they're not going to do that to Arizona, actually. Arizona is also fighting for their playoff lives and has a better quarterback at this moment in time. And at this moment in time, I would say actually a better defense. Although it was against an immobile quarterback, and this week they'll face a mobile quarterback. I think the Eagles put up a good fight, but ultimately they go down swinging, and Arizona wins at home against the underdog Eagles.
Buccaneers at Falcons.
Bucks are going to win either 10 or 11 games. When you look at the schedule, you think 11 because they get to play Atlanta a couple times and in between Detroit. I don't think the Falcons are going to beat the Bucks. I don't think they'll beat them even once. I think that Tom Brady is having an extraordinary season considering his age and considering the fact that he's in a new situation with a new coach. And COVID, they didn't even get to practice as they normally would to get to know each other the same way. Given all that, the fact that Brady's 8-5, the fact that he has a 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio, the fact that he has a QBR that puts him in the upper 50 percentile of the NFL among starting quarterbacks is very impressive. He's not elite, but he's good. And the Bucs have talent on both sides of the ball. They will be too much for the interim coached Atlanta Falcons. Bucs win.
Seattle at Washington.
Tempting for people to take Washington right now because of the Washington defense and the way Russell Wilson's been struggling. But and also, what's on the line for Dwayne Haskins? No Alex Smith. Dwayne Haskins, who I thought was going to be a fantastic NFL quarterback. Here's the dirty little secret on Haskins. He may be a very good quarterback eventually. But who are the kind of quarterbacks that succeed right away nowadays? The mobile quarterbacks. Those are the guys who have enough wiggle in their game to keep defenses honest early while they're learning how to pass from the pocket, right? It used to be rookie quarterbacks didn't start out of the gate, and when they did, they were no good. It took a year or two of holding the clipboard, and then you started to play, and then after a year or two of that, you started to see some production. Dwayne Haskins has time still. He's more of a classic pocket passer than the other guys, but it ain't going to happen overnight, folks. It ain't going to happen overnight. And don't forget, Haskins only had 1 year starting in college. So he's less experienced than the other guys. It ain't going to happen overnight. And it's not going to happen against Seattle, I don't think. Meantime, Russell Wilson eventually will revert to form. And form is not what we've seen recently. And even against this very good Washington defense, I like Russell Wilson to have a big game and for Seattle to beat Washington.
Bears and Vikings.
I got to tell you something. I know the Bears are on the road and they have no offensive line, and I'm not a believer in Mitch Trubisky. But I do like certain things about Mitch Trubisky. You see the way he handled his benching for Nick Foles? It's not that he's not a competitive guy. He's a very competitive guy. It's that he's a good teammate, and he's an actual leader. And when he wasn't playing in a way that was good enough, he didn't pout, he didn't whine, he didn't complain. He said he's going to do everything to help Nick Foles. Like Nick Foles was there for him, right? And he took it like a man. He took it like a leader. And sat down and worked to get better. And the job is his again. And how did he look recently? I got to tell you, he looked pretty good. Given that and given the talent on the Bears defense and the fact that I just don't believe in Kirk Cousins. I know last year he did better, but it was so predictable against the Bucks, right? Like, oh, here it comes, high-profile game, Tom Brady. Cousins is going to lose. I like Trubisky and the Bears defense over Cousins and the Vikings defense. Give me the Bears, even on the road. And that's it. We did the whip around. Look at that. Another successful segment. Quite a segment. Should we go over the highs and the lows? Not the lows. We'll forget those. But what about the highs? Remember when I picked the Giants in an upset? I thought that was a gutsy, bold prediction. Yes? More class.
Max, do you think people will copy that segment too from us? Like start going around the NFL and doing game by game?
You mean the way they did power rankings?
Yeah, the way they bit us on the power.
This is all I can say. I know imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and I get it with power rankings, but we have to draw the line somewhere. I don't want to see a bunch of shows, sports shows, you know, going through all the games really quick and giving out fast opinions.
Putting the NFL bid under them. Put an NFL bid under it and make it all, you know, fast
enough
moving and quick. Yeah, come on. We got
to
draw the line.
You know what we'll have to do? We'll have to innovate. We'll have to, you know, go forward while they're – look, you know, be forward-looking while they're just imitating us. And this is how I think we innovate, Raj.
How's that?
Against the spread.
Ooh.
Huh?
That would be smart. I like that right there.
We pick against the spread. We're not just picking games. We're picking against the spread.
Oh, taking the Vegas. I like it.
Justin Herbert was in the zone last night. He scored 3 touchdowns versus the Raiders. A little quarterback sneak at the end. On Thursday Night Football. Get in the Zone is brought to you by AutoZone. Get in the Zone, AutoZone. We had Tuesday Night Football. It ruined me this year. It's like when Terrell Owens came out with that name, Terrell. You mean Terrell? Everyone I ever knew with that name was named Terrell. Now suddenly it's Terrell, and I can't remember which one is the normal one now. Tuesday Night Football threw my head for a loop. Okay, so you think Jerry West had to tamper to get Kawhi? And do you have a problem with it?
Max, the podcast.
Ray in L.A. Go.
Hey, Max.
Yes.
Man, as a fight fan, I'm sad and embarrassed that you're not up on the movie Snatch. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brad Pitt is a bare knuckles fighter in that movie.
Okay.
You got Jason Statham in his best role, and he doesn't even do any fighting. And you got the best movie villain in one of the movies I've ever seen, a Brick Cop. You got to get
Who?
Up.
Who? What's
that
he called?
Where do you think?
Best yeah. movie villain, you said?
One of the best movie villains.
What's
Brick
his name? Who is it?
Ray,
you got to talk louder. We could barely hear you.
Yeah, yeah. The movie villain, his name is Brick Cop.
Brick Top, all right.
He's what? Yeah.
All right, I'll watch Snatch. Everyone's on my case about Snatch. I'll watch Snatch for crying out loud. By the way,
man,
the three.
One of the best movies. Man.
All right. Three best movie. And, go ahead.
And one quick thing. On the sports tip, man, the Taylor Horton Tucker v. Kyle Kuzma that may be brewing. Do you think there's a bit of a rivalry there that may help Kyle Kuzma lock in a little bit?
I don't know why people are still waiting on Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma maybe could turn into a good rotation piece. You know, Kyle Kuzma not going to be a star. We've seen enough already. Like, it doesn't suddenly happen. He has some offensive talent. He can have a big night. He's not a very good defender, and he's not a consistent offensive player, primarily because he doesn't shoot well enough, to tell you the truth. He's not consistent enough shooter. But Talen Horton Tucker, that dude right there might be a star. Like, remember early on with Kuzma, you were like, oh, I don't know. This dude's really good. And it didn't work out exactly, but he's an NBA player. I'm telling you right now, Talen Horton Tucker is at least an NBA player, but with a chance to be more. News for Max Kellerman Nation. That was Ray who just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. NBA is investigating a Clippers recruitment of Kawhi Leonard. The NBA is investigating the allegations made against Jerry West and the LA Clippers involving the free agency recruitment of Kawhi Leonard in 2019. The team confirmed in a statement, Johnny Wilkes, a man who claims to be close to Leonard and best friend with his uncle Dennis, remember Uncle Dennis, Dennis Robertson, filed a lawsuit alleging West owes him $2.5 million for helping the Clippers land Leonard. The Clippers said the lawsuit is, quote, replete with inaccuracies and that they are fully cooperating with the NBA. Noting that the investigation is, quote, standard when these types of allegations are made, West also denied any improper conduct in connection to the Leonard signing in a statement to TMZ Sports, which first reported the lawsuit. Leonard said after a preseason game Thursday night that Wilkes played no role in his decision to sign with the Clippers, the investigation would fall under the other indirect contact rule, which has a penalty of up to $10 million fine and a loss of draft picks. Well worth the risk if you wound up with Kawhi Leonard. It's another $10 million to Bomber. Number one. Number two, this guy wants $2.5 million. He puts it in a lawsuit when he knows that's going to get the Clippers in trouble. What's that about? That sounds like, you know, like, how hard is it to, well, am I allowed to even say, let's put it this way. Someone wouldn't be unreasonable if they thought that sounded like extortion, right? Hey, if you don't give me something, I'm going to allege this in a lawsuit, and therefore that's tampering on your part. But let's take the other side. Let's say they really did say, yeah, we'll give you $2.5 million. Then the real, like, when you look at it from an ethical point of view, actually, I know what the rules are. You're not supposed to tamper. Such a bunch of nonsense. So strictly ethically, I guess, right, you shouldn't tamper. But from a larger kind of moral point of view, because morals and ethics are not exactly the same thing. Ethics is a code of conduct based on rules and fairness. And morality is really derived from empathy. You know, do unto others or don't do unto others as you wouldn't have done unto you, right? I would say from a moral point of view, if there was a crime there, it's not paying a dude $2.5 million who helped you land Kawhi if you agreed to it. Pay the man his money. Like, in other words, if what this guy is alleging is true, then that's messed up. They didn't give him this 2.5. But the part, like, no part of me feels bad for anyone because they did what they did and didn't follow the letter of the law in order to sign Kawhi Leonard. How do you think deals get done in the real world? And by the way, again, I'm not someone who generally would subscribe to, I think rules following is good. You know, it is good to follow rules. It is good to obey the law. You know, you shouldn't cross the street when the light is red, right? It's against the law, technically. And yet, if the light is red and it's the middle of the day and you can see there's no one, there are no corners to turn or driveways or anything like that, right? And you can see there's no car for a mile in any direction. And you stand there the whole time the light is red and wait for it to turn green because those are the rules to cross the street. You're a nerd. That's what you are. You're a nerd. And, I don't think that applies to Jerry West. Jerry West gets his man. Nerds. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Last take is your take, and it's coming up next.
Max, the podcast.
Hayden in California, go.
Max, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about Harden going to the possible three teams here? First team is the Spurs. Second team is the Omaha Steaks. Or the third team is the Butcher's Box.
What? Who's the third team? What's he talking about? I don't know. I'll tell you, the Spurs is interesting. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Hayden just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call line. I've never considered the Spurs for some reason. I don't know why I didn't consider the Spurs. But I wonder if you could sell that to Harden. Popovich, winning culture. That's really interesting. I wouldn't rule that out. And they may have the assets to get it done. Tyler in Washington, D.C., you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
How's it going, Mr. Kellerman?
Go ahead, Tyler.
I just wanted to talk about the football team you dismissed earlier.
Yeah. Scintillating call so far. Come on, Tyler. I lived in D.C. for 15 months when I was hosting Around the Horn. I was the original host on that show. I know the only thing people in D.C. care about is the Washington franchise. They don't care about anything but Washington. And you call up, you know, pausing and waiting. Go ahead, tell me. What's up with your franchise, Tyler?
The Seahawks are a team that's lost against defenses with strong front fours.
Yep.
Really, really good pass rushing.
Yep.
Like the Giants and the Rams.
Yep.
I think the Redskins got... I'm sorry. I think the Washington football team's got...
I would agree with you if you had Alex Smith. And I'm not saying Haskins will never be a good quarterback. He's much more like a throwback quarterback who's going to take several years to develop. I just don't think Haskins is going to develop into a good enough quarterback to beat Russell Wilson in Seattle overnight. I don't like what you have under center enough to pick you in the upset. But I hear what you're saying about the Washington defense. It's been really good up front. Devin in California, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, what's going on, Max Kell? So, real quick, I'm tired of people saying LeBron James isn't the GOAT and counting him out of the discussion due to him being on the super team or whatever. Mm-hmm. 96, 97, 98. Michael Jordan was on a super team. It just wasn't called or labeled a super team. Michael Jordan himself, Scottie Pippen, top 50 player in the NBA, Dennis Rodman, arguably best defender in the NBA.
Yep.
Top three, top five of all time. Great.
Yeah, it was a super team. I agree.
Time.
It was a super team.
Tony Kukoc, best player from overseas.
You're right.
Ron Harper, number eight. He's a lottery pick. Steve Kerr.
Well, I mean, Harper was post injury there, but he was still a very good player. But go ahead. No. Wait, Devin. We don't have to go through the whole roster. Hold on, Devin. Devin, we don't have to go through the whole roster because I agree with you. It was a super team. That's right. It just and there's nothing wrong with LeBron trying to form his own team when his GM couldn't get it done. Right? They didn't want to trade J.J. Hickson or something like that for Amari Stoudemire. They didn't want to include some mediocre player, like some pretty good but nothing great player for Stoudemire, who wasn't even like amazing, but he was an excellent scorer. LeBron had no help. Absolutely true. I agree. And so I don't discredit LeBron for forming a team in Miami. That's not like KD joining a team that already won 73 games, right? That's ridiculous. LeBron forming a super team, that's fine. But what happened when he joined, when he formed the super team? Like, I take no credit away from LeBron for losing in the finals with the Cavs the first time. They had no business in the finals. LeBron dragged them there kicking and screaming. Amazing. That's credit to LeBron. I don't take credit away from LeBron for losing to the Warriors once they got KD. They had no shot. KD on a 73-win team? Of course you're not going to win. Because even if not all super teams are created equal, and the Warriors had a super-duper team. And by the way, LeBron beat a 73-win team the year before. I don't even blame him for losing to the Warriors the first time before KD got there, because Kyrie and Kevin Love were hurt. Dellavedova was LeBron's second-best player, and they still took him six games. I think it's obvious, had they been healthy, LeBron would have led him to a championship that year. I don't take anything away from LeBron for those years. I give him credit. But I take credit away for losing to Dallas the first season. They should have won that series when he was in Miami. And they lost to the Spurs. The Spurs were an awesome team, but they lost. The Bulls faced awesome teams, and they never lost. Understand, Michael Jordan never played with a single... Oh, it took him so long to win a championship. It's because he never played with a single other All-Star. The first year he played with anyone who made the All-Star team was Scottie Pippen. And Pippen was pre-prime. His numbers jumped up the next year. He was still ascending. But the main thing was, Pippen had a migraine in Game 7 against the defending champion Pistons. He scored 2 points in 40 minutes, so they lost. In other words, Michael Jordan was again without an All-Star. I'm telling you right now, had Pippen played at All-Star levels in that game, Jordan would have beaten the Pistons that year. But then the next year, Jordan came back, and he never again didn't win the finals in under seven games. Well, what about when they lost to the Magic? Oh, shut up. He played 17 games off a two-year layoff, didn't have his legs. What happened when he got into basketball shape the next year? They swept the Shaq Penny Magic. Swept them. And that was a 60-win Shaq Penny Magic team. Swept. And then beat a Sonics team with a prime Peyton and Sean Kemp in six games. No. Jordan, when he was crewed up, I'm not denying he was crewed up. He never lost, ever, when he was crewed up. Not one time. NFL games tomorrow, Max Kellerman, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.